Hi guys, I'm Jess.
And I'm Heidi.
And welcome to the rewatch of season 2 on Betty Squared. Hooray!
Yeah.
So today we are looking at the second episode of season 2, chapter 15, Nighthawks. I'll eventually get this right. I'll eventually do it. It's going to be great. you wait. I did look it up on IMDb. I don't think it really correlates, but still. It's a 1981 film starring Sylvester Stallone, and it's about a conservative street cop named De Silva who reluctantly agrees to terminate an international terrorist who has demanded media attention. But De Silva's at-home tactics are very much put to the challenge. Doesn't really connect, I don't think, unless you can read more into that than I can.
No, but Sylvester Stallone, did he ever do mafia movies? He must have.
Oh, I'm sure he did. I can't think of anything offhand, but he's got to have.
He just makes me think, because of his archetype of character that he usually plays, of Hiram. So maybe that's the connection, but not based on the storyline.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. I think of Hiram and Sylvester Stallone being in the same kind of family as well. That kind of mob boss / I don't know, assassin-ish kind of thing. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Where would you like to start this episode?
Oh man. Okay. So this is funny. Before I rewatched the episode today, I was just putting things on, and I realized, like, last night there were a lot of horror movies on Netflix that I haven't watched before that I wanted to rewatch again. And one of my favorites that's still on there is Scream. I love the whole Scream series, so I was like, ooh, I need to rewatch this again. Yeah, right? Love them. So I was rewatching Scream this morning, and it just... I mean, I've always known it. We've talked about it before, how much Skeet and Cole look alike, and FP and Jughead. But rewatching it today, it super struck me how much Skeet in Scream looks like Cole. Like, it's so striking.
I'll have to go back and have a look and really make that connection. But, I mean, the casting is really very good. They really do a good job.
Yes, all around, all of the parent-kid duos. That's why they had them play them in that flashback episode in season 3. But just I think it's because I watched them back-to-back. I watched Scream, and then I rewatched this episode. And I was just like, woof, yeah. And even when, like, Skeet comes in through the window, or he was looking up at her and had this bloody smile after he, like, when he's about to, like, be killed or whatever. And I was just like, damn, Cole. Like, that was Cole. So that was a funny thing for me today.
I'll have to go back and rewatch it. But, yeah, they're one of my favorite films as well. I actually, the first horror film that I ever watched was Scream 2. I skipped Scream and went straight for Scream 2 because Sarah Michelle Gellar was in it, and I was a huge Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. And I remember that was the first film I ever watched, and I was so scared. Oh, sorry, first horror film I ever watched, and I was so scared that I had to sleep a couple of nights in my parents' bedroom, like, on a blow up because I was so frightened to be on my own. And now I rewatch it like it's nothing. Like, I'm like, okay, cool.
Isn't that funny? Well, I have a very different, I mean, this is now our horror movie podcast. Hi, welcome. Yay. I had a different, similar and different experience with my first ever horror movie. And I'm a huge fan of horror movies now, but I still to this day haven't watched this movie all the way through. My first horror movie was The Exorcist.
Oh, that's a rough one to start with, girl. Yeah. That is, you are diving in head first.
Yeah, I watched it with my sister, my older sister, and I don't know why we watched it. I have no idea how we got a hold of this movie. My parents aren't, like, big, like, horror movie buffs, so I doubt they owned it. But, like, I don't know how we got a hold of this movie. I don't know how we watched it. But I remember sitting in this dark little room that would become the office room or whatever on our futon, watching this movie with a blanket over our heads. And when she came down those stairs, We threw the blanket over our heads and screamed for like a good minute, and then we ran out of that room. And I remember I was like shaking for the rest of the day.
Oh, sweetheart. How old were you?
I was 8 years old.
8 years old. Oh my God. Okay, so I was a little older when I watched it. I was in the eighth grade, so that makes me what, like 14, 15-ish?
It depends on if Australian grades are different, but that would be like 13, 14.
Oh, okay. No. We are similar. We call them different things, but they're the same ages. So, okay. So 13. There we go. My math is a little incorrect. I remember I said to my dad, I really wanted to watch it. I had started to come into horror movies and really enjoy them. I said to my dad, who also was really into horror films, that I wanted to watch it. So we went to like Blockbuster or something like that and hired it on VHS. And he's like, we can sit down and watch it together like over the weekend. I was like, okay. And then like he and my mom went out and I was like, I'm going to watch it. And I watched the whole thing on my own and survived. I was totally fine. Wow. And then I remember some of the girls at school were like, oh my God, you've seen The Exorcist? Like my mom won't let me watch that, or I've never seen it, or I'm too scared. And I remember we were on a class field trip and the whole class was listening to me retell the story of The Exorcist. And they were like, oh my God, this is so cool. I'll never forget that. It was a weird moment, but they were like, can you tell us like what the film's about? I'm like, well, I can explain the whole film from like start to finish. And they're like, yeah, do that. And so I gave them like a 20-minute rundown of this film. And they were all like, cool. And then one kid, I remember, I think her name is Sharni, if I can remember correctly. She's like, I want to name my kid Reagan, which is the name of obviously the girl in The Exorcist, Linda Blair's character. And I remember being like, oh God, I would never call my kid that. That's too scary. But now I'm like, cool. Reagan's a cool name.
Yeah, it is a little like, especially if you're a kid and right after hearing that story, I don't think that would be my first reaction.
No, and I remember it was her reaction. And I think she like came up to me the next day. She's like, what was the name of the girl in The Exorcist again? And I was like, oh, Reagan. She's like, yeah, I want to name my kid that. And I was like, oh my God. I remember being like, oh no. But now thinking back, I'm like, that's really cool. Oh gosh. Well, speaking of all things that are creepy, I want to turn this around and come back to Riverdale and talk about the Black Hood for just a second. So early in this episode, we see Archie at the police station with a flyer that he wants to give Sheriff Keller to like, you know, plaster around town or whatever. I don't know if you got a good look at that picture, but it's hysterical. So first of all, have you seen this man, which is written at the top, is written in this like creepy like murder font, and then underneath that is a picture of a man wearing a black hood with the eyes cut out, and it says, have you seen this man? No one has seen that man because he took his balaclava off. And he looks like a different person now. So, like, really, why is that picture even there?
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. When I saw the little picture on it, my first thought was just like, who did he draw that? Who drew that? How did he get that picture? Did he take a picture of a man and then just, like, draw the hood around it and etch out his features, like with a Sharpie? Like, what is this?
I don't know. It was just hysterical, but I think it was really bad. Production design. Whoever designed that, for what it did for me was it made Archie look like a little 12-year-old kid who'd gone home, got his markers, drawn this thing, and then was asking a fully grown adult to take it seriously. But we know that these kids are far more mature beyond their years. So I feel like Archie wouldn't have done that in, you know, realistically.
Yeah. And also, I think it's even less of like, I mean, we talk about it all the time, so we don't have to, you know, beat the dead horse or whatever, about them kind of running the show, but it's even less of them being mature. That is true to an extent, but it's more of like just a it's a Charlie Brown adults don't matter sort of thing. Like, I'd be really curious to look at the Archie comics and see what the parents say and do in the original comics, and if maybe that's why we have this relationship with the parents. Because other teen shows, they kind of treat it similarly, or it's just that the main focus is on the kids, so you don't see the parents. But I can definitely think of shows like The OC is one that's huge for me, or even Gossip Girl, where the parents have more agency.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, like you mentioned, we've talked about the parents in Riverdale a lot, and, you know, the kids kind of being, or at least talking to the adults, like they're also adults, or they know better, or, you know, outsmarting the parents. It's an interesting concept. It's something that the show has been consistent about since season one, right up until the end of season three. So I think once season four rolls around, we're going to continue to see it. It's not going away. But yeah, interesting to see what it would look like in comparison to the comics. And again, I haven't read far enough into the comics to be able to link those two together or, you know, dismiss the theory.
Yeah, it would just be really interesting if they have a sort of Charlie Brown.
Yeah, I don't recall. Of the ones that I've read, I don't even believe I've been introduced to their parents yet. I don't know whether that's coming or not. I imagine it would be, especially in the modern comics, like the ones that have been written to correlate with the TV show. I imagine the parents are in that. I think the original comics, like the classic series, I don't know. I would probably guess we would see less adults.
Yeah, I would assume that too. So maybe that's, yeah, maybe that's why. Speaking of comics, though, what a good segue. did you notice the Veronica's reference to the New Yorker when she was talking to her dad?
Remind me. Tell me, like, in the context.
So they're in the, it also kind of connects to another thing. Smithers. Aw, I miss Smithers.
Oh, no, Smithers.
He was just the sweetest to her. So sweet. Sorry. But it's when she's leaving the hotel or whatever, apartment, whatever you would call that kind of complex they live in. Her dad walks in, they have a discussion where he's like, oh, I haven't seen you in a while, you should come to dinner. And she's like, eh, fuck you, or whatever.
That's exactly what she says.
I am quoting verbatim. And she says something at the end of it, to end it, where she's like, to quote the New Yorker, the famous New Yorker comic, is never a good time, Dad? How about never? And she, like, walks away. It's something like that. And I was like, oh, I don't know what that is. Like, I'm curious what that is. And I looked it up, and it's this little comic where he says exactly that. He's like, oh, Thursday's not good. How about never? It's never good? By Robert Minkoff. And it's also a book. I just thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. Oh, the writers have done their research.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, it's like that classic New Yorker comic, you know?
Right. Yeah. I can see them now in my mind's eye, what the New Yorker comics look like. They've got a very distinctive look, but yeah. I've never read any. And I'm really impressed that you went and looked that up. Like, I wouldn't have thought to do that.
Yeah, it was just something I was like, I don't know. It was something I caught this episode, so I don't know. You don't have to be too impressed. You're usually the one looking stuff up all the time for us. So.
Oh, please. I do like a little bit of IMDb research to see if there's any correlation between an episode name and a movie name. Let's not get carried away.
Giving credit where credit is due, but thank you.
All right.
But thank you.
Cool. Well, my next note is I miss the boy next door moment. So we have a really, like, great moment where Betty looks out her window and she realizes that Archie isn't in his room and hasn't been for, you know, a couple of days or whatever, and so she calls Veronica. Mm-hmm. I forgot that they even live next door to each other. Well, I mean, now where we're at in season three, they don't. But yeah. I forgot all of that. I forgot that she had the boy next door crush, you know? And I missed it I miss that like closeness between the two of them. They're that best friend kind of vibe.
Yeah, they definitely don't have that best friend vibe anymore. And that is sad, but it did make me kind of maybe excited for season 4 because, you know, as you said, they're not really neighbors anymore, although we really don't know where Betty's staying now. Like, I mean, I guess she was with Veronica, but she probably is staying with Jughead just as much. But since Jughead is now living next to Archie, I'm curious if we get to see any, you know, best friend neighbor situations in this new season. That would be kind of fun.
Yeah, I really don't know what season 4 is going to bring, and I'm really excited about it. They can literally go any way, and it looks like, you know, they're trying to set it up to be like, you know, Jughead's dead or murdered or they've been involved in some kind of crime, and I'm just so excited. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's really open, and that was what I was hoping for, and I know we've talked about it a little bit before. With wanting to tie up storylines and kind of get things covered and end some stuff, loose ends that were previously open in season 2 and season 3 that kind of continued on. We were hoping for a clean slate, and it looks like that's what we're getting, so that is exciting.
I'm actually just looking on this awesome app that I've got to see when the next season comes out, and it hasn't been released, so I don't have a date, but I did find out that there's another season of The Masked Singer coming, which, yay, I really enjoyed that. It was my guilty pleasure.
I think I watched an episode or two maybe, but
I was into it, and I think it was the mystery about who was behind each of the masks, so I think that's what kept me really like clued in,
attracted to it. Concept, yeah.
Yeah, but it looks like, yeah, still no release date for season 4. Not yet, anyway. That's a shame. Hopefully soon.
Well, then what's your next note?
Oh, sorry, got distracted looking at all the TV shows that are coming up. My next note is, Mayor McCoy, I forgot how insufferable she was as the mayor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, so frustrating, such a bad mayor, and also the fact that she basically has disappeared off the face of the earth in season 3. We, like, haven't seen her.
You know, she's living her best life. She got married to her childhood sweetheart, and she's able to be a lawyer now and really help people. I think not being the mayor was the best thing to ever happen to Mayor McCoy.
Oh, agreed. Totally, totally agreed. She went from being an asshole to being an actual likable character. But, like, we didn't even see her, like, when Josie's like, I'm going to go and tour with my dad. We didn't even see any kind of conversation between her mom and her. No, like, it would have been a great way to just bring her back in, just even for a hot second. So,
there was no time. They had so many storylines to wrap up. You think they could do that? No way.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, it's, God, they were so busy trying to wrap everything up really quickly. Gosh, and as frustrating as that all was, you know.
Yes, and I was being facetious. So.
Oh yeah, I knew you were. I can tell by the tone of your voice. But yeah, it was just, I forgot she came in, and I was like, oh, Mayor McCoy, I forgot about her. And then she's like, I'm not going to help you, Jughead. And I was like, oh God, I hate her. I forgot how awful she was.
Yeah, she's not the greatest.
Nope. Oh my God. Okay, I have to just jump into my next note because I think you will find this really, really entertaining. My next note is, ew, Midge and her stupid hair are back.
Her hair's not so bad in this one. It hasn't grown out yet. But I, as soon as I saw her, I thought of you, of course.
I'm so black and white with these characters. I either love them or I hate them. There's no in between.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's really true.
But initially, when she walked out, I was like, wait, who's that? And then when Reggie was like, hey, Midge, I'm like, oh my God, it is her. I hate her. I hate her.
Yeah, Midge. She's still alive.
I feel like they weren't sure what they were going to do with her character. Like, the way she looks and the way she behaves doesn't really justify the way that the character acts, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, they wanted her... I wonder if the direction for her was just be like, be neutral. Like, you could be anything, and that's what we want. Go. Like...
Just, I feel like she was meant to be kind of badass, but she didn't act or look badass.
Maybe just like normal teen girl who's experimenting, you know, with boys and with drugs.
Yeah, with gay boys and drugs.
Yeah, poor thing.
Yeah.
Although that seemed to be her speed, so.
Yeah, I know. What's your next note?
We sound so excited about this episode, and we're doing anything we can not to talk about it. I've just noticed.
What do you mean?
Like, we digressed for a really long time about horror movies. We digressed again about, like, when's the new season coming out. Maybe I'm just talking for myself, which I am also just talking for myself, actually. I just don't have a ton of notes, and this episode, when I was done with it, was like, meh.
I don't have a ton of notes either, and... When it finished, I was like, wait, do I not have a ton of notes because I didn't enjoy it or because I'm watching it in hindsight? And I think because we have gone back and we've rewatched, this podcast has grown as, you know, each episode of the TV show has come out. And I think that's what it is. It's like we are looking for different things now. And I think it is hard to go back and look at things in hindsight when you already have so much other information that comes. So I think that might be the reason that, you know, our notes are less than they would be with the current season or, you know, upcoming seasons. I didn't hate this episode, but I was the same. I was very much like, meh, it was a lot of setup.
Yes. And it's, I mean, that makes sense. It's the second episode of this second season. There was a lot of exciting stuff and fallout and whatnot that happened at the end or at the last episode for being the premiere of this season. So it makes sense. This is kind of like setting stuff up and just moving the plot forward. But I just thought that was funny. That's just how I felt like we were talking.
That we're talking about the episode but not actually talking about the episode?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like we're still discussing it. I feel like we're breaking stuff down, but I don't know. You and I think differently about things anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just funny. It's just how – it's probably what I wanted to do. You know, like that's my intention. Just because it was – yeah, it was a meh episode. But I did notice two things with like – I wonder what we could call this when people – like the physical change in like – the costuming of the character that's like physical hair, facial hair, body stuff that shows us that something's off. We've talked about it before. Alice, yeah, when she has her hair up, which is the opposite of Betty, who when she has her hair down. And then Jughead, if he doesn't have his hat on, is like either he's somewhere looking nice or there's something wrong because he's like holding it and crying or something like that. Veronica, she doesn't have her pearls on or whatever, stuff like that. In this episode, I noticed, and I'm sure it's happened before, but it was so different for me. I feel like if it's happened before, it's only been a couple times.
Okay.
Betty had her hair in a bun.
Yes, I did notice that, and it actually really bothered me because there was a shot that they took, like, I think it was focusing on Veronica and Archie, and so it was the back of Betty's head. And the hair was so bad. Like, it had all these lumps and bumps. Like, they hadn't combed it out properly. It wasn't smooth.
Yeah, it wasn't a good bun either. Yeah, it was bad.
It was not a good bun.
And do you remember another time where we saw her with her hair in a bun?
No. Not off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Certainly not in this episode. I wonder if they were just kind of trying it and went, oh, no, that didn't work.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Because it's like her big thing is to have her hair pulled back. So what makes sense is to do it in different ways. And we know a low pony is a low energy, sad, depressed Betty. And No Pony kind of goes to that too, that she's off. So it's probably them trying something. But yeah, it didn't work and was weird.
And that's probably why we haven't seen it again.
Definitely. Or if we did, they changed it so much that we didn't notice and don't remember it.
Exactly. But yeah, I noticed it straight away. But I chose to kind of dismiss it because I was like, no, her hair is still up. She still looks like her. She's still behaving like her. So I just ponytail categorized it.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think this was one of those moments of something's wrong. And you can tell because they look different. But yeah. I did feel that way about Archie because this whole episode, and maybe it's because the TV I'm watching it on is nice and HD. And I'm used to watching Riverdale on my phone or on my computer. So maybe that's part of it, but, Archie's 5 o'clock shadow, stubble, like this whole episode, he had this consistent stubble going on.
But that was to show that he was like tired and staying up because he wants to make sure that Fred's safe.
Yes. But also he's like, what, 16?
Yeah.
He's so old.
I noticed that too. It was the scene where Alice comes to talk to him and Fred about, like, you know, what she's found on Miss Grundy's body. And the light hits Archie really nicely. But you see this very thorough 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah, it was, it didn't really work. And I think, again, this was the episode of trying things and then never doing them again. Because I don't remember them doing that later on.
No, I don't either. And the thing is, KJ Apa is not a ginger by birth. Like, they color his hair. Yes. He's got black hair or very dark brown. So I'm wondering with the stubble if we're noticing it more than we would should that person be naturally ginger.
Oh, yes. I mean, if he was naturally a redhead, he would have blondish facial hair and you wouldn't notice it.
No, but I think we're seeing it more because he's naturally a brunette.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And since he, you know, since he's not 16, he's like 20, he's early 20s, like really early 20s. When he grows facial hair, it changes what he looks like exponentially. Like my friend who was my roommate when I lived in New York, he's one of my best friends. He, if he has a beard or if he doesn't have a beard, it's like a 10-year difference. He could be literally,
wow.
Like, it's intense. And he recently grew a mustache. Very, mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't look like a little kid, but if he shaves his face, he's a baby.
That's crazy.
And KJ's like that too, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But I keep coming back to it because it keeps making me giggle about the fact that it was a very even, non-patchy, mature 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah, that's the thing too. It would be whiskery. It would be patchy. It wouldn't be like, that's not always true, but some younger guys, younger women, some people grow facial hair that is thicker, and it all kind of depends, but it just doesn't work for this.
Yeah. I mean, I've got very dark features and I come from, you know, a very culturally diverse background, so I can grow a mustache just thinking about one. So yeah, well, I've probably already got one now. What was that?
I said, well, then don't think too hard on it.
I know. I'm like Mr. Potato Head when you like push Play-Doh through him and it just like comes out all the little holes where you put in like the lips and the eyes and stuff. Yeah. That's how I grow a mustache, like one of those little Play-Doh noodle makers.
And the fun thing about being naturally blonde is that I always have a mustache. You just can't see it.
I'm so jealous. Being a brunette and being, you know, like of an ethnic background.
Yeah.
Girl, like I said, I'm surprised my mustache isn't down to my feet from just having talked about it.
Well, we should definitely stop then. What's your next note?
My next note is, damn, season two drug dealing Reggie was hot.
Oh, did I felt like he's more, I think he's cuter now, but.
Oh, I disagree. I think he's gone soft. I like me a bad boy.
Oh, that's what it is. I felt like his hair was too, like, slicked. I like his kind of wave that he's got going on.
I really liked it. It was kind of like parted to the side and combed over, and I was like digging it. I really thought he looked cool and sexy and attractive, and yeah, I was all about season two drug dealing Reggie.
It's definitely a different Reggie, and it's funny too that we've had so many different Reggies, literally and like
figuratively, yeah.
Because season one Reggie, we had a totally different actor. And then it's funny to me because I can't, if they had given this storyline to that Reggie, season one Reggie, I'll look up his name. I can't imagine that.
You know what I mean? I think the exact same thing, especially when I was like, damn, he's hot. The actor who played Reggie first, also very attractive.
Yes. He's a sweetie though. He looks like a little sweet. I want to pinch his cheeks.
Right. And that was the thing as well. Having watched him in 10 Reasons Why, where his character comes through this really strong arc and comes out as like a good, decent person,
yeah.
I think that that is influencing how I now see him if I put his face back in Riverdale.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm kind of like, I had the same thought, but then I was like, wait. Am I having this thought because I've got this other character that he portrayed in my head too?
I think that's part of it, sure. But I also just thinking back to, even with all, he pulled some crap in season one, but I still feel like it would feel weird if he was doing it. Ross Butler, that's his name, Ross Butler.
Ross Butler, yes, 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 yes.
I still feel like regardless it would be weird, but with this Reggie, who is, I know his name, and I, Charles Melton.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Melton has that bad boy look that is perfect for this storyline. So I definitely feel like that was part of the casting. They were like, this is where we're going with Reggie, so we want to have this kind of look.
Yeah, I agree. And even when you look at Ross's face, if I was given a photo of both of them,
mm-hmm.
I would say, oh, Ross is the good guy and Charles is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate that. That's my least favorite thing about acting. When I was in college, I had this one teacher who was an absolute asshole. He was so arrogant and just constantly said things that were inappropriate. But I remember on one of the very first classes we had, he like read everybody. He looks and he goes to the two like gorgeous people in my class who were really quite gorgeous. He's like, you guys are the leading couple. Everyone else is like the friends, the best friend. And I remember being like, I hate that. I hate that that's what you read when you see me. You know, how dare you? And then I took a better look at the industry that I've, you know, spent 16 years in. And I'm like, actually, you know what? That is true. Not that I'm the best friend, but you know, you read people and people make assumptions about you before you're even cast. Mm-hmm. I worked with another director. You know, I have dark hair. I have dark eyebrows. You know, I've got very defined features. And this director was like, I bet you get cast as the bad guy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was so intimidated by this director. I was just like, yes, I do. But in actual fact, I actually never get cast as that. I, on paper, look like that. But then when people meet me and they see my personality, they're like, you're the ditz. You're the silly, clumsy friend. Got it. And that's kind of how I read. So it's really, yeah, it's interesting.
It's funny because there's lots of layers to it. And let's do the same thing with FP and Fred, with Ross and Charles. If you put Skeet now and when they were kids up against Luke Perry, you would say Skeet is a bad guy and Luke is the good guy. But when we get to delve into who FP is as a character, there's layers to that. And he really isn't the bad guy in any terms in the show. But there's yeah. those moments, especially in the beginning, they kind of lead you to go that way. But there's so many layers. And it's also a part of who you pair on screen together as well. Because if you have, I'm trying to think of an example, like when KJ was with Ross on the show, when he was Archie, and in season one, obviously he's always been Archie and and Reggie together, and it was Ross was the bad guy because we just knew that Archie was the good guy.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting too. But yeah, we could talk about the business so much. I've never been considered a leading woman or anything like that. Always the best friend, always the mother. Oh my God.
I've started to come into my mother role now, and my agent always sends me briefs. They're like, hey, we're submitting you for the young mom in this. And I was like, all right.
You're like, young mom, please be specific.
Right. Well, they normally do. They say young mom, young hip mom. And I'm like, okay, cool. I can do young mom. I cannot do young hip mom. Let's just get that right. This is going to be daggy mom, daggy young mom. But yeah, I'm like, okay, cool. I have come into this part of my career. I am now young mom. And then they get me in the room and they're like, actually, you're more like the cool aunt. But anyway.
True. Both of us, the cool aunt. Let's rename the podcast.
So true.
Oh, when Riverdale ends, we have the title of the podcast.
Oh my God. The cool aunts?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Did you catch that Betty and Kevin met at Pops?
Yeah. She has met everyone she knows in her life through Pops. Isn't that funny?
I never, ever picked that up. And I was just like, oh my gosh, that's a really sweet moment. You know, that little scene where she's really reminiscing about how much she loved Pops, I just thought was brilliant acting. I felt that memory through her.
Yeah.
And then when I heard her say, Kevin, you know, that's where we met, I was like, oh my God, she met Kevin at Pops. Yeah, we've never heard how they met.
Yeah, we never have really gotten that story and that background to them. I think it was another really great acting moment any time where Lily is on screen is a great acting moment, like just in general. I also like the scene with her mom. It's at the very end, so we're going to jump a bit. Where her mom tells her that she's the reason that all of these bad things are going to happen in Riverdale, like you are drugs. Oh my God, it's ridiculous.
Worst.
Just the worst.
I literally wrote my note, and it was my last note of all the notes, was Jesus, Alice, talk about bad parenting. God, poor Betty being told that she is single-handedly responsible for crime in Riverdale is just awful.
Yeah, super, super bad. And I love, too, we got some chewed from Betty today to her mom. She wasn't afraid. And I feel like more recently, because she's so afraid of losing her mom, she isn't like kind of being as like teen snappy at her mom as she used to be. And we got to kind of see that in this episode. So that was nice. But the scene where her mom is telling her off and being like, you're the reason, blah, 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 blah. She like her, Alice starts with like a question or she says something and Betty just goes like, what? And then she says something else and Betty goes, what? And like just the face acting was so good. She was like legit clueless. And that's what sets Lily just apart from everyone else. She doesn't tell you what she's thinking. She shows you. She is present and she interacts with the moment in the moment as she's having it. It's always fresh. It's always new. I would love to see Lily on stage. Oh my God.
Me too. I think she'd be phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Because she is experiencing that moment right then. It's not a line read. It's not something she memorized and she's saying because she's supposed to be saying it. It's fresh in the moment and it's beautiful. And just those simple little like, what are you talking about? Like that. So good. It was so good.
Yeah. I've never looked into Lily's like background as far as her training and like other roles and things like that. But I'd love to know like where she studied, if she studied. But I bet you anything she's one of those naturally gifted people that it just comes organically. You know, some people have that, some people don't. But I bet she's one of them. I'm going to have a look into that during the week and I'll get back to you about it.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I know she started pretty young because I've seen like little audition clips or like I've seen things online of her looking much younger than she is now, like making audition tapes and stuff like that. So I figure she started at least in her teens.
Which was like yesterday for her because she's so young.
I was just going to say, not too far off.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
And I might have just kind of like misconstrued the situation. But Tall Boy, in regards to him introducing Jughead to Penny versus like where he ended up as a character and his relationship with Penny, do you think he was playing the long game?
Refresh me on Tall Boy's relationship with Penny.
Well, he's the one that obviously introduces Jughead to Penny.
Yeah.
And then Penny goes a little cray-cray and Tallboy kind of follows her.
Yes. Yeah. So, yes, I'm remembering. Yeah, this to me, rewatching this, especially when you see FP's reaction to it and us knowing what Penny's like when Jughead walked in there, I was like, no, get away from Penny. She's the worst. My note on her is literally, ugh, Penny.
You're gonna laugh. My note on Penny is, wow, Penny used to be really clean.
Yeah, she did. She got so dirty.
she really did, metaphorically and literally.
Both, in all ways, she was both of those things. But yeah, in this episode, I was thinking about that too. It definitely seems like either this was the first sign that Tallboy is not to be trusted. And that there's something off with him, even though he's been like, you're in the family, we're going to take care of you, blah, blah, blah. Because that's how he sounds.
I was going to say, that's exactly how he said it, too.
all of his, like, stuff that he's saying. It seems like, yeah, this is probably the first sign that we shouldn't trust this guy. And definitely could be the first sign that they're, if he's in cahoots with her, it's way more likely that he is trying to bring, you know, bring Jughead, who I assume is a power player in the Serpents, even if he's not officially one yet, because FP was the leader, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it just kind of struck me. I was like, hang on a minute. I'm like, Tallboy was the one that introduced Penny into the whole, you know, FP Jughead thing. I'm like, I wonder if, you know, his character is just playing the long game. But interesting.
Yeah, it might not be like necessarily like a that he sees the outcome to this, but I think it's probably maybe more that they had this is just showing they had a relationship. So he's the most likely to like bring this whole group together and weave this web without really knowing the outcome.
Yeah.
My next note is about the Jughead and Veronica scene, because there's so few of them.
I've got a note on that too.
It was really lovely, them connecting over their daddy issues.
Yeah, I literally wrote word for word. I really love the moment between Jughead and Veronica.
Yeah.
I kind of live for those little scenes where you're like, oh, they are actually friends. It doesn't matter that they're each dating each other's best friend.
Yeah, I think they would. And I think maybe this is funny because I think this is still really early on in all of their like relationships as this core four unit. But I think it's a nice example and an early starting place for them to make you go, okay, that even if they weren't all in these pairings, I think when push comes to shove, they would be there for one another when they needed to. They kind of have like, and it continues on after this season as well, or into the season and after, will sometimes butt heads because they are two very different people.
Totally.
But I think that this shows really well that they really do care about each other. And maybe earlier in season one, it wouldn't have been the same, but it's nice to see that even early on, they kind of had this inherent care for one another. And I feel like they have zero romantic chemistry, which is also nice.
Yeah, I mean, remember that episode, I think it comes later in season two, when they're all like playing truth or dare and stuff, and Veronica and Jughead kiss, and it's the most like unromantic thing you could possibly show.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
And it's interesting because I don't think that Camilla and Cole actually have much chemistry.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they do.
Yeah, which is really, again, really interesting with casting. We know that Veronica and Jughead are never going to be a thing because there is no romantic chemistry there for whatever reason.
Yeah, and if they do, I think that that'll be a mistake on the part of the writers to do that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, did you watch Grey's Anatomy?
Oh, for a little bit, and then I kind of like fell off the wagon with it.
No worries. It's an early season, so George and Katherine Heigl's character, Izzy. You remember?
They had a thing?
Yeah. And it makes as much sense as you think it makes. Because they were really, really best friends, really, really good friends, which isn't even what Jughead and Veronica are to one another, but it makes me feel like that. Like, if they got together, it would be like George and Izzy, where it doesn't work. And it didn't.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that they learned. They broke them up, right?
Yeah. They did.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But yeah, well, my moment.
Yeah. My next note is in regards, and I think I've made this note before, for whatever reason, when the principal wants to make an announcement, he always chooses Archie's class.
Yeah.
He doesn't call like a school-wide assembly or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, can we talk about the fact that the principal has gone into this class and has just openly said, oh, Miss Grundy's been murdered, blah, 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 blah. How about like some kind of trigger warning? Archie just saw his dad get shot. Like, he is in a vulnerable state. Like, how about we don't do that, principal?
I also don't think, so if I'm, when I was in high school, if a teacher left and went to teach in another town, they just wouldn't make an announcement like that. She's not a teacher at the school anymore. It's pointless. There's no reason for them to do that.
Yeah, I agree completely. Yeah, you would never hear from them again.
Yeah. They would maybe, if it would be in the paper or something like that. Like, it wouldn't be a school announcement. It's just not appropriate for that environment.
I would really like in season four, if the principal needs to address the students, that he addresses all of the students. I'd like to see some reality there because it's just one of those things that bugs me, you know?
Yeah. I would like a God mic announcement, please. Thank you.
Yes, even the God mic. We don't even need to see the principal. We just need to hear him in all the classrooms.
Yeah, I think that's they don't get that you could just do like an intercom announcement.
Right. Oh, my God.
My next note is about the milkshakes cover, which I hate.
Oh, I hated it. Yeah. You hated it too?
Yeah, I hated it. It just...
Oh, my God. It was interesting as well because Cheryl gets up there and sings with them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing this like little weird hip buppy thing. And for whatever reason, she's either going the opposite way or she's out of time.
And she's off. One of them, it could be Madeline, it could be the other girl, is off their mark because they're not equidistant to one another, to Josie.
What?
So off and bad.
It was just awful about all of the things. Yeah. All of the things. I just, that whole part, I was like, okay, this needs to be done because I'm over it.
Luckily, it wasn't a long scene. Thank God.
Yeah, even the music for that was just atrocious.
Yeah, it was bad.
Oh, gosh. I actually wrote a note which ended up revealing itself.
Yeah.
But my note was, oh, do we really think that Hermione wrote the letter for Hiram, or is she just scared or trying to help Hiram, which of course reveals itself later that, yes, he did in fact write that letter threatening Veronica, and Hermione kind of realized that and stepped in and you know, took the blame for it.
Clever story, yeah.
Yeah, and I forgot how much that Hermione kind of does that stuff for her husband. And I was like, oh, God, I just hate that. I hate that he has that control and that power.
Yeah, she said something in this episode where she was like, good to have you back, Hiram, or something like that. And I can't remember what it was, and I just, it's so cringy.
It was when Hiram goes, as of 5 minutes ago, we officially own Pops.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, and she's like, good to have you back, Hiram. And I'm like, no one would talk like that.
Yeah. Also, such a quick transaction. Also, I totally forgot how early on in the show that they bought Pops. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot it happened this season too. I actually thought it happened in season 3 early on in the piece when Veronica purchases Le Bon Nuit. But yeah, it's crazy watching things in hindsight how much you're like, oh my God, that happened years ago.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. Speaking of like when they're all in Pops and stuff, I couldn't stop laughing at the way that Alice was taking photos of like the drug deals and the serpents coming in. Like, she was so obvious.
Yes. That's funny because that's kind of like my last note is similar. I was like, oh, Alice being an actual reporter. But her also being a very obvious reporter.
It was, oh God, it was crazy. I love that she came in and she's like, I'm here to, you know, write this story, Requiem for Pops or whatever it is. And she's so mean and she's so negative. And now, like, you look at her in season 3 where she's just completely gone off the deep end. It's just, we've said it before. I just think they didn't know what they were going to do with this character. And they've taken her on a journey.
Yeah, that's very true.
Oh, God, it makes me laugh a lot. Well, the only note that I have left is something that Lily posted on her, I think it was her Instagram or her Twitter, when this episode originally aired. And I remember seeing it and having a laugh because Lily's really good at laughing at herself and not taking herself too seriously. And that's what I like about her, too. But when Cheryl is on the stand and she's, you know, trying to say that she forgives FP for his involvement in her brother's murder and all of that, she looks over at Betty and Betty just doesn't move, but she just raises that eyebrow to be like, bitch, you better like bring this story home. Mm-hmm. I remember Lily posting that on Twitter or Instagram, that little gif of her just lifting her eyebrow. And I think she was like, my eyebrow is out of control this episode. Come watch or whatever. It was something really funny. And I'd forgotten about it until I saw her do it. And I just started laughing.
That is really funny. I love it.
Yeah. What have you got left?
That was my last note, the one about Alice.
Oh, okay, great. Whoa. We're at time anyway, so that's all wrapped up really nicely.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So what would Betty do this episode?
Betty would – I love that when Jughead – after they meet with the Blossoms to kind of see if they'll give FP leniency, Jughead walks out and he's like, oh, well, we could bribe them. And he's like, but I won't do that. I mean, they're like a widow and like a grieving – daughter, you know, like that's fucked up or whatever.
An orphan and a grieving and a widow.
Orphan and a grieving widow. And Betty turns around and goes, you can't, but I can. Like,
she doesn't actually say that though, doesn't she? Just look.
No, she doesn't say that, but like internal monologue, that's what happens. She turns around and she does that. She's like, well, I guess I'll do it then.
Yeah, totally. And you know what else is really interesting as well? I know we're wrapping up the episode, but you know how we were like, what happened in the barn when, you know, Cheryl was like, and if you ever, you know, try and cross me, I'll tell everybody what really happened in the barn. I got a little bit more of that kind of vibe when Cheryl sits down with her mom at the end of the episode and plays Jason's murder video for her. I got a little bit more of that kind of feeling like they were going to eventually go towards what really happened in the barn, and then they just kind of swept it under the rug. I don't know if you felt that at all.
Yeah, I feel like that too. I feel like that was probably a thing that they were planning. And then when all of these millions of different storylines opened up that were kind of bigger than I think they thought they were, it was too small potatoes. They didn't feel like it was big enough for them need to address.
Yeah.
And hopefully one day it'll come back and bite Cheryl in the butt.
Wouldn't that be awesome if just all of a sudden it just like pops up in a season to come?
Yeah, I hope that happens. I really hope so.
Yeah, me too.
But Betty, she would not be afraid to use bribery when it's necessary. And she would save. It looks like she did anyway. The chocolate shop.
She'd say, yeah, exactly. Exactly. She's got good intentions and a good heart.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, everybody, we will catch you next week for another episode of Betty Squared. Bye.
Bye.